This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Bread and Roses on the KBOO airwaves. The longest running feminist radio show in the country.
Yes.
Woohoo! And you know, when I really pause to think about that, to really take it in, I am in awe. I imagine all the women who passed through this collective over the years, who lent their voices and energy to keep women-powered radio alive through the decades. I think of all the women who trained other women to engineer and create public affairs programming. All the women we had on the air as guests, sharing their good works in the community and the world. And I think of all the KBOO staff and volunteers and community members who help support and protect this continuum of airspace devoted to women's priorities and achievements. And of course, I think of our listeners. Tonight, we honor all of you. It seems almost miraculous that Bread and Roses is still on the air and that KBOO is still here. But it continues, and here we are. We are thrilled to be joined in the studio tonight by two very special guests. Susan Dalbroff, our founder. She started the collective back in 1978.
Wow.
And Pam Lynn Pegg, an active member in the early to mid-90s. I've really enjoyed getting to know these women in the pre-interviews. They're a lot of fun. We're going to hear about the early days of the collective and its vital work over the years. And we'll also hear clips from the Bread and Roses archives.
Yep.
And now it is my honor to welcome Bread and Roses founder, Susan Dalbroff, and collective member, Pam Lynn Pegg. Welcome back.
Welcome. Woo-hoo! Yeah, glad to be here. Yeah.
This is wonderful. This is such an amazing opportunity. Thank both of you for being here. I'm just really curious as to how you came to be as a feminist. How did you awaken? Susan, would you go first?
Wow. how did I awaken as a feminist? You know, it was, it's very hard to go back and think of that time when, you know, watching Mad Men these days, so you're looking at the story of people, men and women in the 60s, as the movements were happening and people's lives were changing. You know, my story, I had a very strong mother who was professional, and both of my parents were politically active, and I only had sisters, no brothers, and we were just a female-centered household, not with any, you know, feminist consciousness, just we were all females, and so that's what I started with, and that, and so then as I, you know, moved into the world through school and just being out there and then getting involved in the civil rights movement first and the anti-war movement first, you know, I just started seeing that things were really different out there than they were in my family. My father was thrilled to be this big support for his wife's career, which was sort of more stellar than his. They both worked full time, but she was a big shot and he was not. And it wasn't a problem. Mm-hmm. So I came from that kind of background, and then I started seeing how that was really unusual. Mm-hmm. And the norm was something completely different. And you know, so the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, the women's movement, they all sort of morphed one from the other. And I just sort of just made my way into the women's movement, and because it was like home.
Mm-hmm. Pam Lynn, how about you?
Well, I have a different experience than that completely. I grew up with all brothers. Mm. And I was in the Midwest, in Kansas and Missouri. And having been in St. Louis and then going to Wichita, Kansas, my eyes were like all of a sudden slanted, and I had to have a lesser view of what the big world was. And I knew there was more, but it took me until I got to college before I really started to become myself. And college was a wonderful thing. And by the time I went to the University of Kansas, it started in Hayes, Kansas, and then I went to the University of Kansas, they had, you know, gay dances. And I just came out. And then in 1976, I went to the Michigan Women's Music Festival, and you could say the rest is history.
Or herstory.
Or herstory.
Well, or, you know, whoever, I mean, all of it, it's a story that basically, you know, I had a place to grow. Who I was before that, there was just this picture of who I would be, and I did not fit that picture and never did fit that picture my whole life. And finally, going to college, I got to fulfill that picture that I had of myself and what that could be.
Hmm. Wonderful. I am, now I want to know how, Susan, you became involved with KBOO, and then how Bread and Roses got started.
Right. I learned radio from the radio station in New Haven, Connecticut, where I was going to college. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the call letters. It would have been W something, something, something. And we had a program called Sound Sisters, and I think it was a collective. We taught each other how to engineer, how to splice tape, and how to put on programs. And that's where I got my love of radio. Actually, I have to go back further, which is that my father was a ham radio operator. Mm-hmm. And from an early age, there was nothing more fun than going into the radio room where my dad was on the air talking to people 3,000 miles away, talking to people in Russia. Men, all men, and you know, I just got the bug of communicating over millions of miles, and how powerful it was, how thrilling it was personally, but how empowering it was also to reach people far away, and so. Then getting involved with the radio station was just another step on that road. So when I got to Portland, getting involved with KBOO was like, I actually applied for a job at KBOO, didn't get the job, but did make my way into my first group of friends, which were all the staff people at KBOO. Mm-hmm.
And then Bread and Roses, how did that happen?
So Sarah Cook, who was the station manager at KBOO in the 70s, for a year or two anyway, she had a program called Wednesday Afternoon Bouillabaisse. Mm-hmm. And it was women's music, news, and public affairs. And she burned out on it. She needed to move on. And back in those days, you just, she said, would you like to do the show? And I said, of course. And so I took it over and changed the name to Bread and Roses because I loved that Judy Collins song. And because it perfectly described my approach, which was that women, that we need economic power, we need bread, but we need art. We need the roses, too. So that's how Bread and Roses got started.
Could you give maybe a little bit of background about Bread and Roses and that movement and what it meant for people who might not be aware?
Right. Well, you know, women's labor history certainly goes way back. And the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire in 1914 is really and the song Bread and Roses was really important. Now, I don't know what came first, but anyway, all of the, and it's very reminiscent of this, these people dying in Bangladesh just recently, it was the garment industry in the Lower East Side of New York City, and it was all women and girls, pretty much. And there was a fire, and there was no good fire suppression or anything, and all these women died. I don't know what the number was, but that was the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, and that was the progressive era, and it's what got started in child labor laws, mm-hmm. and in protective laws for women and men, so that the sweat of their brow didn't kill them, and there were some protections.
So then how did the collective get started?
Well, the show was weekly, and it was 1 hour, but boy, what it takes to start with raw music, news, public affairs, data, and turn it into an hour's worth of programming is, you know, it takes a lot of work. And I just, and I was working full time, of course, and politically active and in a relationship, and I just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So I think I did it by myself for about a year, but I'm not, you know, if Elsie gets interviewed later on, she may tell you something totally different. And I won't.
Elsie, who was one of the first collective members.
Right, right. And so then I asked for women to join in, and we each had one show a month. So it was 4 or 5 members of the collective. Yeah. And we each took a week and did our programs. Mm-hmm.
Can you guys share some of the topics that you covered back in the day or topics that you were most passionate about? Either one of you can go first.
Well, there was endless topics. And one of the things that really always helped women who were listening was if you talked about women. And that had to do with everything. So it was about our health. It was about economics. It was about housing. Mm-hmm. You know, people would write books about cancer. You know, this was long ago when they didn't even know that HPV, you know, caused mm-hmm. cancer. And there, you know, was Rachel Carson and what was going on there. As a not just as a city, but also as a country and even the world, we were becoming a lot more knowledgeable about things and their repercussions and how what we did affected others and taking responsibility for that. And that was kind of the new thing, was that, you know, groups of people were going to take responsibility for some of the things that were going on in our neighborhoods and in our towns and in our country and in our counties, all of that, and even, you know, in the world. And that's why there's, you know, all these large groups that go and keep track of the whales and want to know about Chernobyl and what's going on in Long Island and all kinds of things environmental, but also personal, like birthing stories and midwifery. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the list is pretty endless, and things would just end up in my mailbox, and I felt like, you know, once you got on here and you felt comfortable, that the world kind of took you, you know, under its wing and said, here's what we're doing next.
I like that you say that there's endless topics, because I like to say that every issue is a woman's issue. I think that sometimes, you know, we just stay stuck on, you know, relationships or, you know, everything that, you know, has to do with women. But there's, you know, everything has to do with women. Susan, would you share also what were some of the topics that you liked to cover?
Yeah, we often, I mean, this is both Women's Soul and Bread and Roses, but we would often interview musicians who mm-hmm. came through town. And back then, there was women's music, and it was something different. I love hearing that you went to the Michigan Women's Music Festival, because this was the music that wasn't played on Top 40, and you had the women's movement just erupt, and we had the musicians to back us up with the great sounds. I guess Chris Williamson's Changer in the Change, that record sold 100,000 copies, and, you know, that was a feminist album, but it was also popularly successful.
And it didn't matter where you lived in the United States, everybody knew all the words
that's
to
true.
Chris Williamson's
that's
Changer in the Change.
That's true.
Because I lived in Lawrence, Kansas.
There you go. And so when Meg Christian and Chris Williamson came to town, we had them on the air and we interviewed them. We had them perform. Holly Neer came to town and I interviewed her. She said that she thought that why women had trouble breaking into the mainstream is that it was men who owned the record companies and the radio stations, and they weren't able to appreciate the different sound of women's voices being higher or richer in some ways, different anyway than men's, and so that hence the need for, you know, quote, women's music. And that was a, you know, nobody else was talking about that. And there was Holly Neer, who did actually make it into the mainstream in some ways. I just saw her in, she had a role in Slaughterhouse-Five in the movie of the Kurt Vonnegut. She was the nearsighted daughter of Billy Pilgrim. Yeah, that was back when she had long red hair. She was a beautiful woman, and she played this, you know, frumpish woman with glasses and overweight, and anyway, it was a great role. So all of this stuff was going on, and any chance we got, we would bring all of that to the airwaves. And I think I was telling you before we got on the air about Lesbian Connection was a, you know, sort of mimeographed magazine that was nationwide.
It still is, sort of, kind of.
Is it? Great.
Yep.
Great to hear that.
I still get it.
That's great. Well, so they did a story called Serial Monogamy, C-E-R-E-A-L, and which was around the time Margaret Mead was doing her thing about S-E-R-I-A-L, monogamy, that, you know, heterosexuals have these, like, 10-year marriages, and it's called Serial Monogamy. So I did this story, this sort of takeoff called Serial Monogamy about, you know, I really like Kix, and I had a hard time letting Kix know that I was going to have Cocoa Puffs the next day. But so anyway.
After 10 years. I just want to say that I think that the people that I enjoyed the most from doing Bread and Roses is the women that I met locally. And I just want to say, I want to say Ruth Curry's name here, because I was looking for Grey Panthers. And Ruth is 36 years older than me. She's well into her 90s now, still alive. Her name is one of the women's names on the Walk of the Heroines at Portland State University. Mm-hmm. And that's just why, you know, I worked with women who... Holly Pruitt, who is a very well-known feminist in this city, and had very important women from Portland on the show, learned a lot about what's going on here, mm-hmm. and who is who among women. And mm-hmm. it was really moving to me personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that insight. I feel that we are still so true to what you guys were trying to do back then, because I also really enjoy using my show as a platform for local women speaking out about what they are doing in the community. And talking of this, actually, there is KBOO is going to be broadcasting Wednesday night, May 22nd, the Portland Women's Movement panel discussion. This is part three of it, Fighting for Ideas and Dollars. And so that's, you know, happening live at PSU. And KBOO is going to be broadcasting. So this starts at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. It's going to be 7 p.m. Absolutely. You're listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Delphine Critchley. And I'm here with Leanne Kranz. And tonight we are bringing you the history of Bread and Roses with Susan Dobroff and Pam Lynn Pegg. We're going to take a short break, and this is not going to be a musical break. It is actually going to be an archive break. And we are going to play just a few minutes from a show that was produced in 1978. And so that's a show that was produced the year that Bread and Roses was created. And we are going to go to that clip. Women Working Against Racism is the clip. And this is some women from the Native American community, Chicana community, African American community, talking with Margot Fegger. I think that's the name.
I thought it was Fegery.
Fegery. Margot Fegery is interviewing these women, and they are talking about racial encounters in the community. Let's go to that clip.
Could we talk about what some of the very clear racist things that go on, you know, like on an everyday basis? Because I really feel like a lot people have blinders, and they have blinders because if they don't have the blinders, they lose the powers that they get by having them. They have blinders to acknowledging they have racism, just as, you know, men often have blinders to acknowledging that they're being sexist. Could we just talk about some clear examples and incidents of people, like, getting defensive, or ways that people back out of admitting, you know, that they are racist?
I think one of the things that I have experienced is in Oregon, it's really tried. They try to hide it in a way. It's hard to say they won't let me sit at this table, or they won't let me come in this store, or they won't let me buy. But I can give you a couple examples. In terms of for me as a black woman, there are only a few places in this town where I can go and buy makeup that really works for my skin. They only carry, for example, and I don't know if we're permitted to talk about products. Okay. They carry Fashion Fair as a black product, and Flory Roberts is a product that is used by a lot of black women. I can't buy that at Washington Square. I can't buy that any place with Lloyd's in it. Maybe downtown. But they don't carry it at the stores in Washington Square, as if I may not shop in Washington Square. another thing is that just little innuendos, you know, it's okay to be a part of an organization, but don't try to attain any power or leadership within these organizations, because then you're out of your place. We need you as a token in this organization, so that we can say we've got some minorities. But once you assume some leadership or try to assume some power, then you're not well received, and you're isolated. And when you walk in a room, the conversation stops. And it's those kinds of things that I've experienced.
You're listening to Bread and Roses. We're back with our Bread and Roses founder, Susan Dobroff, who began the collective way back in 1978. And we're also joined by Pam Lynn Pegg, an active collective member in the 90s.
Woo-hoo!
I'd like, you know, I'm very curious about the political climate in Portland during the eras that you were involved in Bread and Roses. And also, you know, not only was what was the climate like nationally and in Portland, but also within the walls of KBOO? What was it Did you encounter opposition? Uh-oh.
Oh, you know, there's like a every decade revolution at KBOO yes. for one thing or another. I mean, when I, back in the early days, in the late 70s, the board fired station manager Sarah Cook, and there was this whole rebellion, and Phoebe Friedman, may she rest in peace, who was a Trotskyite communist, she made these rules. She was on the board, and she made these rules about staff couldn't speak at the board meetings, and it was unbelievable that they were and that they had rules about what you could say on air that was about content. Mm-hmm. That when there were these rebellions and things going on with the board and the staff, you might get kicked off the air if you spoke about any of that stuff on air. So that's KBOO. But, the thing I mostly remember about the 80s, 70s and 80s, about the Portland community is how very insular and how very sort of racist and homophobic it was. I remember the first gay pride parades, and I had a friend who worked in the senior council in Clackamas County, and she was afraid of losing her job if she marched and somebody saw her. So she marched with a bag over her head. And in fact, actually, she did get photographed by the Oregonian, and it was a big controversy in Clackamas County, which was even more conservative than Multnomah County, and that the gay pride parades, there would be these, the Christian evangelicals, and they'd have these huge signs that said "Turn or Burn," yeah. And they would come around and scream at us, and they'd tell you they were praying for you, and it was ugly. You know, there was just it was scary, but even more important that we all came together and marched once a year. And I mean, gay pride, the pride thing, it's not even called gay pride anymore. And it's
Pride Northwest.
Well, it's hundreds of thousands of people, mm-hmm. and it's as mainstream as it could be, and it's. Yep. Really
well,
different.
Well, it used to be that everyone who was watching the parade would join in at the end of the parade. And so everyone was part of the parade. And didn't matter if you're gay or straight or whatever, there was support there. And even though there were people like that, Turn or Burn,
right.
God, there were all kinds. There still are, actually. At every gay pride at the very beginning, they always try to dampen the dykes on bikes, and all of that, and make sure everybody gets the whole picture. Okay, we got it. Can you just keep moving, please? it's changed. And, everybody participated. And that's kind of a little different now. Yeah. People want to be spectators. And there's a whole lot about being a spectator that people are making money off of and stuff, but it's good, technology has taken us in a lot of places, and the pride is much bigger than it was then, and even all of political movements in this city have expanded, and even though there was a huge backlash, and in the 70s, there was a huge feeling that as Americans, we were going to create who we are, and we had a place in this world, and that we were going to change things just by creating new businesses and being who we are. And that money was there, and economics were significantly different, and they were really changed in the 80s. And we really thought that, this world, this land is our land, and we're going to make it a better place. And then, of course, the backlash came in, especially in the 80s with Reagan, and on, but it's just expanded nonetheless. There's lots and lots and lots, at least the same percentage of people are participating and helping to create peace in this world and to, make our country in our city a better place to live. We're voting on this stuff about the water. Water is a huge, huge issue all over the world, no less here than anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious, Pamela, we heard how Susan got involved with Bread and Roses. How did you get involved with radio and with Bread and Roses in the 90s?
My partner was like, I want you to go and be at KABU. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
Was your partner a volunteer here?
No.
No?
Nope. Nope. Nope.
Get out of the house.
Go to KABU. I'll just leave it at that. And I'm glad you laughed, because it is funny. And so I came over here, and I'm trying to remember if it was Beth Hyams who was like the volunteer coordinator or someone who was before her. I just came over here and I said, hey, dudes, I think I can volunteer here. And they're like, okay, right. And I was like, okay, I found Bread and Roses. Mm-hmm. And I tried to start my own other female-centered shows, and they, the programming committee wasn't too hot on that. But, and occasionally I subbed for Woman Soul. But basically, I found about Bread and Roses and just jumped in with both feet. And the collective expanded and contracted and did all kinds of things. But, I just kind of came down and said, hey, can I help? Mm-hmm. And they said, sure. And they got me trained on being an engineer. And those days, you had to do everything. And those days, wasn't the digital era. It was the cut and splice era. So if you recorded somebody, it was a heck of a deal. And even if you had someone in here, it was a heck of a deal. The engineering room looked a lot different than it does now.
Right.
And there were a lot of women who really wanted to be on the radio, but they couldn't do it solo. They weren't able to master the engineering. And that was something that was very hard for us then, because the room was a lot smaller, and even having two people in there to do it together was quite an art. So there were a lot of women who really had projects or issues that they wanted to bring onto the radio, but they had to, kind of participate in a backseat point of just a backseat. And that was unfortunate. I think people even today would be interested in it more if it's somewhat daunting, men and women, not only to be on the air, mm-hmm. but the commitment involved. And that's what Susan was talking about, of why mm-hmm. it became a collective, is because it's a heck of a commitment to be here, and you're not getting paid.
Right.
And you might not even see anybody. Bread and Roses used to be on after the Celtic Hour at like 9 o'clock at night when I was doing it. And it was like a Thursday. I think it was Tuesday or Thursday.
I thought it was Tuesday.
It was Tuesday, right.
When I did it. Yeah.
It was Tuesday. And we were after that. And I just loved that gal who was in front of me. I just loved her. And then I think it was like, Rastafarian after me or something. I don't always remember. But, those would be the only people you would see.
Right.
And you'd be here by yourself in the whole place, responsible for the airwaves. Right. And that was just daunting. That's daunting for a lot of people, because anything can go wrong. All of a sudden they can tell you that there's, that emergency broadcasting thing.
Right.
You got to deal with it.
Dead air is every radio person's nightmare.
Well, this might be a good moment to read this poem that I found in my journals. That it's sort of a poem that I wrote in 76 when I was still in New Haven. And I had just learned something about editing. Shall I spend my life picking through the brown, shiny tape, recording, editing, playing with sound, with events? I've spent a day sitting before a tape machine with no plan and little engineering ability. Among the patch cords and reels, I was sharp and careful of combination. Until Stone Tonight, I did something upside down or backwards and swam through the brown stuff till I finally threw it out. The point is, I like it. Watching my fingers clumsy with splice tape, listening to hours of jumble become minutes of intelligible, exciting stuff. The main point is demystifying the machinery, being competent, understanding that maybe I can learn anything and use these tools.
Dude,
that's
great!
Yeah, that was Susan Dobroff, Bread and Roses founder.
So I just want to jump in there because I feel that this is kind of like really harmonizing, like some of the feelings that I have. Like I came to radio really like by, you know, I don't want to say, you know, it was not something that interested me, but I just never knew that I could do these things. I just didn't know. And I used to do a native show, and it was Sunday morning, and there was nobody there. Mm-hmm. It was community radio in Bloomington, Indiana. And so I can relate, you know, on that level. But I feel that it's just so empowering, and that's one of my goals in life is to teach. And so Leanne and myself actually are going to young girls who are in facilities where they cannot leave that place. And we are teaching them, like we're bringing field recorders and we're teaching them editing software. And we see the empowerment in them. Mm-hmm. And this is so beautiful because radio has changed me, it's changed her, and we've came together to create this beautiful piece that we make available for young girls who might not have the opportunity to come to the studio. So, you know, I just wanted to say, you know, that I just relate so much on that level as far as it being so empowering and just never having thought that I could do that myself.
That is way cool that you guys do that.
It's a lot of fun.
It is.
And you know,
what about you, Leanne? How'd you get here?
That's it.
You know, I moved to Portland and loved a certain native show on KABU and got to know the DJ and just started hanging around and never anticipated being on the air. I didn't feel like I could think on my feet in that way. You know, I didn't think I had it in me to be an engineer. I just liked hanging around. But, you know, if you hang around KABU long enough, somebody shoves a mic in front of you and go. So I decided, you know, out of all my political interests, where did I want to focus? And it was definitely women's issues. So I joined Bread and Roses, and I must say it's so much like your original vision. You know, we cover the hardcore political, but also the cultural and artistic, and women's music is huge still. And I too was raised by strong women and, you know, I feel like I've been fighting the fight since I was a child on the playground. And I really, honestly, I think this work is vital for our survival as a species. I know that sounds dramatic, but I think this is about shifting things back into balance and seeing where we end up. So thank you for starting this, and thank you for sustaining it. Give us a place to channel our passions. And
we're doing our best here. Yeah.
Thank you for still doing it. Yes. Yahoo.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
And 6 o'clock.
I know. Happy hour on Friday night.
Yes. We have a hard spot. But I also wanted to piggyback on what you had said, which is the amount of work that goes into it. So just to give you guys an idea, to prepare for this show, not only did we do pre-interview with you guys, but we also sat and looked through archives and learned how to splice tape.
We spliced tape.
Whoa.
We threaded the reels. It was cool. Now we know what you guys went through.
I don't think you, I mean, I thought everything is digital now.
No,
so,
it's like, it's all in that back room. And so some of the things that we are playing tonight is actually that. And I thought that that would be a great moment to actually do that and go to one of this archive. You're listening to Bread and Roses. And what we've done is look through the archives that were produced by women back in the days. And so there is this one speech that was actually produced by Elsie, who's one of the early Bread and Roses collective person. This was in 1983. And so she recorded that speech, and then she produced it And so the speech is by Gloria Martin from one of the founder of Radical Women. So we're going to go to that archive now. Gloria Martin.
Long ago, radical women had many, many discussions with black women at the University of Washington. Many white women almost came to blows. Well, they did come to blows. The Black Student Union told black women to stay away from white men and use physical violence on the black women. That was some years ago, 10, 12. Time slips by. I'm 66, and I forget what year is what. Nevertheless, we had this big dispute, not we, because we decided then and there that we would make it an unwritten rule that white women and radical women would not go with black men. Then we were accused of racism and all kinds of things. But we did that for a reason. We realized and we know damn well that there will be no revolution without black women, without Chicana women, and without Asian American women. And I want to point out to you, we have some comrades in San Francisco, Asian American women. They said, we will be seen and we will be heard, invisible no longer. And that was one of the things about the Asian movement for many years. White people wanted Asian people to be invisible, quiet. They also wanted other minority people to be quiet. And of course, there's racism in the feminist movement. There's sexism, too. We're all taught to be modest and unassuming, you know. And we couldn't possibly lead anything, could we? But we're leaders without knowing it often. Some of the best women leaders I've known were surprised to hear they were. But I want to say this. Ideas can be colorful, but they don't have no color. They're not imported and deported from across the seas like people, in spite of what Reagan says. And you've all heard him lately. And I want to point out that Lenin said a long time ago, and I don't think this was an idea with color, that our fight and our demands and our needs, especially our demands, have to be based on the demands and needs of the most oppressed people. And who are the most oppressed people in capitalist society? Women of color, lesbians of color, workers of color, right? I hope you agree.
You are listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Delphine Crescenzo. I'm here with Leanne Kronz, and we have Susan Dobroff and Pamelene Pegg with us tonight. Both of them were involved with Bread and Roses Collective a while ago. Actually, Susan founded Bread and Roses in 1970, and Pamelene was involved in the 90s. We just finished listening to a piece of a speech given by Gloria Martin that was in Seattle in 1983, but Elsie, who was one of the very first collective members of Bread and Roses, recorded that speech and produced it. And yes, this was on a reel. And Leanne and myself, thanks to our archivist, Bruce Silverman.
Yay.
Bruce Silverman, and my husband Noah, who also helped out. But Leanne and I were talking about how empowering that was also to learn how to do that. So, Noah, we don't need you anymore. Noah's my husband. Well, I wanted to move on the conversation and see if you could talk a little bit about how you, if you encountered any opposition amongst women, either in the community or even men in the community for doing the work that you were doing on the air.
Huh. Or at KBOO.
Well, you know what? I'm just going to say that was L.C. Hansen.
Oh,
and
we keep talking about her.
Have recorded that right. At that time meant that you're carrying around this, well, we'll just say less than perfect gear, that you probably needed some kind of adapter and you weren't sure if you'd have it. And then you had to bring it back here and put it on to reel to reel and then splice that and then put it on the air. It was quite fun. It took a lot of time. But thank you, Elsie. Yeah. I hope you're out there listening to us because I know you still live here.
We hope to have her on the air in June with us. So.
That'd be good.
Rock and roll.
So your question was opposition from women or men?
In the community or at KABU? At KABU. Did you take any grief for doing this work?
I didn't get any grief from women. Actually, this was Woman Soul, where, let's see, there were men. So the program was Friday night, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., and there were men hanging out waiting for Matt Clark and the Starlight Express. And I was playing Ghost Riders in the Sky by Buffy St. Marie. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway, beautiful, beautiful music. And I went out to go to the record library, and they just started making fun of the music, you know, just sort of goofing on the music and how stupid it sounded to them. And that was just rude. And they were really telling me that they didn't think that well, there were certainly people who were against there being a three-hour slot, especially on a Friday night, that was called Woman Soul. They thought mm-hmm. that something else should be in that slot. And so there was, at program committees, there was always, like, grousing about that. Wow. But, and also in New Haven, where I first learned about radio, I remember we were Sound Sisters was doing a show about rape, and when we stepped out from the air booth, there were two men there who one of whom said, "You ladies are just completely off about this. You would just solve the whole problem if girls would just put out more for men, then there wouldn't be any problem. Then there wouldn't have to be rape because, you know, men just do that because that's the only way they can get sex," which is so completely wrong and wrongheaded and stupid. But he felt fine telling me what he thought was right, and when I was being wrong in talking about rape as an act of violence, not sex. So those are two things that I remember specifically. But generally, people were very supportive, and they would call in, and they loved to just, you know, talk to the person on air. And I had women and men calling me and flirting with me because I had that sort of voice that, I don't know, got people going. And,
well, I guess and you still do, because we got a couple calls, actually. One of them was a request to have your poem put on the KABU website so people can actually locate it. So
very
that's
nice.
Kind of cool. Unfortunately, it's, you know, soon going to be time for us to wrap up. I know time just flies when you're having fun, right? I'm just wondering, like, maybe Pamela, you can go first on that question. What was your vision at the time for women in the new millennium, and how does that compare to where we at as women right now?
Talk about a huge question.
Deep.
Okay, 30 seconds.
Come on, you know, it's like, yeah, I wasn't really prepared for that question, but I'll tell you this, you know, it's like, to me, people are people. Mm-hmm. And as a society, there's going to be people who do not want things to change. And that is men and women, you know, and women want their roles like they've always had, and there's going to be men who want their roles like they always have. And let's face it, one thing hasn't changed. In general, women have babies and men don't. And that's, you know, like I said, in general. But people are people. And there's a lot of us that are doing a lot of work to try to make this world a peaceful world and a place where everyone can be who they are and feel comfortable. And that's what I think today. And you know what? I really thought that then, too. It's just that, you get involved with all kinds of movements, you know, in life, and there's all kinds of things that happen, and truth to tell, you know, there's going to be people who want to take advantage of other people, and there's going to be people who don't care if they're taken advantage of, and there's going to be people who are doing things collectively and collaboratively, and I think that's probably the biggest change from then, is that we were very collective-minded, mm-hmm. in especially the 70s. Things were so different. We really honestly thought we could create exactly what we wanted. And yet, there were people who were going to keep things the same. So now we talk about things being done collaboratively and how we work together, and we have all this experience to show us how to do that, and we've been doing that. And of course, there's always church, right? And things that happen there and collaboration. So I'm saying that a lot of it isn't so new as it was then, so to speak. But also, you know, we're having to, you know, we're visible in ways that we never used to be visible, partially because of this program, but also because, you know, there's a lot of people who know it takes everybody to make it happen.
Yeah. Susan?
Well, you know, in the 70s, my friend Sarah Cook, her first partner died suddenly, and Emma Lou's family swooped in, and Sarah was nobody, and she had no ability to assert herself or to be part of the funeral or the taking care of Emma Lou's body. And to think that 30 years later, lesbians are getting married is just, I would never in the 70s in a million years have imagined that that would ever happen.
Even in 2001, yeah. To even think of it today, we never ever thought we'd see it in our lifetime, but we continued to work for it.
Mm-hmm. On that note, I think we're going to have to wrap it up. It's just been wonderful.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for making this happen, both of you. And I just love the whole thing.
Yeah, keep up. Keep it up. We love it. We're
you
glad.
Guys should come back.
Yes.
And be hosts
again.
Advisors.
Hey, you know, we're out there creating. You know, there are things that we're creating, mm-hmm. and KBOO is a wonderful place to make sure that those things, you know, get on the air and that other people know about it. So I'm going to keep y'all posted.
Good. Yes.
And you can keep KBOO's audience posted. And I really want to thank you both for keeping this going, not to mention the engineer whose name I don't know.
Mike tonight.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you,
hey,
Mike.
Baby, it's great. And Bruce for keeping the archives. And there's a heck of a library here,
mm-hmm.
and it's a wonderful thing. So let's keep community radio going.
Yes, and if out there you're wondering how you could be with us here in the studio, listening, just sitting down, or even in the engineer booth, please contact Ani Haynes. She's our volunteer coordinator. Volunteer at kboo.fm. You can actually, it's kboo.org to email her, volunteer at kboo.org. Check out our website, kboo.fm/Bread and Roses. We are also on Facebook. It's Bread and Roses, KBOO Radio. And what I want to let you know is if you do find us on Facebook and like us, you get access to some of that archive. It is on the KBOO website. You can look at it. It's just easier to find if you like us on Facebook, and then you get to get updates as to what our next shows are. Radical Women Tape, some of it we played tonight, the Gloria Martin. We also have Oregon Women in Labor, and then we have this full hour of women working against racism in 1978. So that's beautiful. Next week, I'll be hosting. I'll have I'll play for you a recording I did with Jackie Samel. She is in Louisiana, and she's been working with this gentleman named Herman, who's been in solitary confinement for 40 years of his life, and she created this art exhibit called The House That Herman Built. And I will also have Emily Jensen co-hosting with me. You know, it's bringing in new people. So again, thanks, Bruce, for helping us. Thank you, Mike, for engineering. And Leon, I know you wanted to leave with a beautiful quote.
Yes, in honor of the founding of Bread and Roses by our guest, Susan Dobroff, and the hard work of Pamela and Peg in the 90s, here's a quote from Audrey and Rich. The connections between women and among women are the most feared and most potentially transforming force on the planet.
And we'll also leave you, yeah, pretty powerful. We'll leave you with this song. It's also a Bread and Roses song.
By Judy Collins. It's her version that you all played back in the day. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
I'm TJ Ravenwolf, Koi Khan Athabaskan Muscogee Creek from Alaska. I'm here in Portland, Oregon. I'd like to invite you to an evening of Native American art, music, storytelling, and traditional indigenous foods. Come join us for the Indigenous Experience Northwest at the Scottish Rites Ainsworth Event Center on May 30th, starting at 4 p.m. Music starts at 7:30 with public speaking, art, storytelling. And at 7:30, upstairs in the ballroom, we have four Native American Music Award winners performing. Keith Sekola, Cody Blackbird, Swill Canem, double feature with Big B and Nate with the Brian Harrison Trio. For more information, go to theindigenousexperiencenw.com.
Naked, Lynn Fitch, Raw and Exposed, Sunday, May 19th, 6:30 to 8 p.m., and Monday, May 20th, 7 to 8 p.m. Hear the untold truths about the KABU Station Navigator. Ask your own probing questions. What experience does she really have? Where did she come from? What was she doing in China in 1995? What secrets is she hiding? How does she know Arlo Guthrie? And where is KABU headed with her at the helm? Sunday, May 19th, 6:30 to 8 p.m., and Monday, May 20th, 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to the live interview with Lynn as she unveils herself and stands naked before KABU listeners.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. On today's show, we tackle key issues of the day. That's right, it's news, views, and hip-hop. All that and more coming up.
Standing in front of us, a friend of the show from our sister station, WPFW, it is the one and only Jared Ball. How you doing? Dr. Jared Ball.
I'm as good as could be expected. It's always a pleasure to be here.
I wanted to talk to you because we are on the eve of celebrating Malcolm X's birthday. And, you know, the Malcolm X Jazz Festival coming up and all that sort of stuff. But also, I wanted to talk to you in particular because you were one of the many scholars and the lead scholar in pushing back on what many people felt was a book that did Malcolm an injustice. And we're talking about Manny Marable's piece. And you and a number of scholars came together to correct what you felt were erroneous pieces of information. Let's talk a little bit about that, Marable's book, and why you all wrote your book.
Well, again, thank you very much. And I prefer to be thinking of myself as part of a collective as opposed to any kind of leadership. But I am part of a group of people who were frustrated with the direction Marable's book went in describing Malcolm X and his life, and particularly the politics and the ideas with which Malcolm grappled, which we, for a variety of reasons, think are extremely important, even in 2013. Given that so much of what Malcolm tried to change about the world remains unchanged, and in some cases is even worse today than when he was alive. So what we saw happening with Marable's book, whether it's the flaws of scholarship, lack of resource, or lack of attributable sources, a very narrow view ideologically, a conservative narrow view, a liberal view, rather, of Malcolm X, we saw that there were many problems that need to be addressed, and we wanted to do it as a collective. It was not something we thought one